This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Thank you all out there for joining us. It's always fun to come out on the airwaves and share some cool new technology with you guys, and today is no exception. Today we are joined by a second-time guest, but not second time for him, just their organization is represented for a second time. And we are joined by the other co-founder of Grubber, Bavin Asher. Bavin, how's it going today?
It's going pretty good.
So why don't you, I know we had your co-founder on, Sam, a couple of months back, but why don't you give our audience a little bit of an understanding of who you are before we dig into reminding people what Grubber is, and then we kind of talk a little bit about what you guys are doing to solve industry problems out there.
Sure. I'm Bavin Asher. I live in South Florida, in Boca Raton. Our offices are there. I live there. I have two kids, no dog.
No dog. That's not the American dream, man. Two and a half kids and a dog and a white picket fence. Isn't that the way it's supposed to work?
When my 3 year old becomes probably 13, maybe, but my 3 year old is my, you know, my pet. It takes time, attention, time and effort. I'm the founder and CTO at Grubber.
Wonderful. So you're the technical half of Grubber. I'm assuming, yes. Since you're the CTO. Tell me a little bit about your background. Where did the technical stuff come from? Because I'm guessing, if you've got two kids, this isn't your first foray into the technology sector.
No. So I graduated with a computer science degree, joined IBM, was always part of like a business consulting group. So that started my career at IBM, went to Germany, did some large enterprise projects, so cutting edge call center upgrades, technology upgrades in all these, you know, Fortune 100 or Fortune 50 companies. Joined Deloitte after, did some strategy consulting with them, again, across the globe. I've lived in Mexico, Europe, Asia, for projects again. So did Deloitte. After that, recession hit around 2011-12, peak recession. I was, again, I had the itch, I was bored. Like, what do I do? I went back home. My home is India. So went back home in India, helped a couple of friends scale their startup. It was a travel startup called Musafir. Musafir means traveler in Arabic. So I helped them scale their India operations. They were based out of Dubai. Did that for fun for 2 years, scaled them from 0 to 3 million, took the staff from 0 to 120 people.
Oh, wow.
Realized travel, you know, you're young, you get in, you don't see the whole business aspect, realized very soon. Travel, the margins are wafer thin. When I say wafer thin, it's thinner. You lose money most of the time. So came back to the US, did some consulting, but joined Salesforce right after. Became their director in 4 years. I got and did, again, cloud SaaS consulting for 4 years for every Fortune company you can think of. At that point, I was 34. You know, you hit midlife crisis early. I hit a little early. At 33, 34, I'm like, what am I doing? I was just one of the guys of 30,000 people. Granted, I was getting promoted every year, but I'm like, I need to do something better, right? I'm always about making a difference in the world and living a legacy behind. You want to be remembered for doing something which changed the world, or at least you tried and went down trying. Versus at 60, because my kids were growing up and she was now 5, and I'm like, I don't have many stories to tell except my traveling stories. So yeah, that is where one of the, it's a famous story now. And it always starts with my wife. Actually, I proposed my wife in 2010 in a helicopter. There's a video on YouTube, which I'm not very, very proud about. So again, Valentine's Day, I think it was 2017, January, February. And I was at a restaurant in Brickell in Miami, and they were running Windows 2000. Just to give you some context, Windows 2000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, it was like 24, 26 years ago. And I'm like, this is not real, because at Salesforce, we were working on deploying a lead management system for our internal Salesforce employees, where Salesforce will tell you whom to call and who has the highest propensity to buy based on various data points, right? The tool is called Einstein now. It's available to public. And here I am staring at Windows 2000. I'm like, this is, you know, you talk about disparity between the top 1% and the bottom 99%. That is that tech disparity in the restaurant industry and rest of the world. Or hospitality in general. I'll take this beyond restaurants, right?
Yes.
Yes, and that is where it all started. That is where the idea came in. I'm like, this is a gap, right? And I was very, I had done a couple of other things before in recruitment and technology recruitment. Was pretty successful there. That is what funded the startup, funded Grubber initially. And I have a friend, I met him, went to his restaurant and sat there for a week. He has multiple concepts across UK and US. I'm like, you know what, Mr. Sood, I'm just going to come to your office and sit down or go to your restaurant and just sit down and just see how you operate. I just couldn't believe what I saw. And it's literally going back to the 90s where you had a cable company and you had somebody else selling you the cable. So when you call, there's no call center, there's a middleman. And the middleman is like, I don't know, call this 1-800 number. You call that 1-800, you go to another 1-800. That's where the restaurant industry and hospitality industry is today, even today.
Yep.
And that's where the gap came in. And I'm like, that's one. And I think, and I'll move on with the story, but the second piece is also QSR, the quick service restaurants and retail. It all comes from the 1950s and 60s when there was a baby boomer generation, population boom was happening. We were moving forward and McDonald's and Taco Bell and all these companies were coming up, right? They invented the model of you standing in a line, you going through the rigors of ordering, and you'll see in the kitchen, fries go in first, burger goes in next, and then they put it in a tray and they give it to you and then you pay. That was in 1960s or maybe earlier, 60s or maybe earlier, but that has not changed even today.
Yep.
Everything around us, every single element of your life and our lives have changed. We don't use landlines. We don't travel by coal-powered, steam-powered engines anymore. Everything has changed around us except that experience. And yeah.
Well, and it's funny that you bring it up because a lot of the guests that we've had on over the last few years, and while much of it has been accelerated through COVID, the restaurant industry historically has been such laggards as it relates to technology adoption. And so it's funny that you come from kind of that consulting technology background and you look at it and go, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be. This has been my entire life's history. It's a family business that I get to work in. And ultimately, I've been in this space going, if you just want to grab people and shake them and go, you know what? Windows 2000, are you kidding me? Like, you know, and the part that makes me laugh even more so is they would never have a 20-year-old iPhone, but they have a 20-year-old point of sale system that's paying for their iPhone or a 20-year-old, you know, kiosk system or whatever it is, that's paying for their Mercedes payment or their iPhone payment. And so it makes me laugh that they don't consider those things.
Yeah, no, that's a great anecdote, right? Yes, that's correct. Because you know, the reason was because you could get kids at $4 and $3 or even for free and just pay them minimum wage with tips and make it. Guess what? That's gone now.
Yeah. Oh, right? No, absolutely.
And the customers have become more vocal with the Generation Z coming up who live on their phones, right? I've seen, like, if you notice around us, when I go to a concert, when I'm going through, I went Universal recently, everybody who's, you know, everybody around us, I think I'll not even give the age group, is looking their life through the lens of the phone. They have the phone in their hand with the camera on. I'm like, why don't you enjoy the live event? No, they're actually recording and looking through the screen.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. If you're so used to it, the person on the other side of the counter doesn't even know how to take an order anymore, doesn't know how to greet. There's no small talk. There's no smile. So I was just at Starbucks, like right before our call, and literally the look on the face was, why are you ordering? Like, why are you here?
Yeah, exactly. Order on the app and don't talk to me because yes. All I'm here to do is produce your coffee or produce your food.
Yes. And this is what I saw, frankly, we saw 4 or 5 years ago. And I'm like, this is going to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I started selling. And frankly, this was even before McDonald's kiosk had launched. I'm very grateful that McDonald's kiosk actually validated our startup and said, yeah, okay, you know what? This is a real business.
So for those that either missed the episode with Sam and or aren't familiar with what Grubber is, talk to me a little bit about what Grubber is and kind of where you guys are at in the market, what you guys are trying to solve. Because we've kind of talked in and around the ideas of what Grubber's doing to, you know, to change the market. But why don't you, you talked about a little bit of the why, but what is it that Grubber does? And tell our audience a little bit more about your guys' product and how you guys are going to market.
So Grubber is an enterprise platform for self-ordering technology. Anything to do with self-ordering, where if you cannot find a cashier, and I'll dumb it down, if you cannot find a cashier, if you want to keep your restaurants open in the afternoon or late nights, if you want to keep your restaurants open or any business open during weekends, holidays, and not deal with labor issues, we are your answer. And what does that mean? We give choice to the consumer. So I think Sam must have brought up the airport example, which is... Mm-hmm. I can be on my laptop and check in, select my seats and do everything. I can walk into the airport, go to the kiosk and do all of that same things. And now my last option is an agent. By the way, she'll be in the corner, or he or she, and you'll never be able to find them. And that experience as a consumer, we are now used to. I can order on Amazon. I can go return at Kohl's. I can go to Home Depot, buy stuff, or still go to Home Depot online on my desk. We are used to it now. It's inherent nature of human behavior, right? Hospitality has not changed, and that is what Grubber does. We provide a self-ordering technology in the form of a kiosk, in the form of QR code, in a form of a website, and we take all the pain out of integrations. The biggest question is, oh yeah, but that's great, but I have my investment stuck with POS. I just bought NCR, Oracle, Square, Clover, and our answer is, hey restaurant, no problem. I will integrate. We are already partnered with them.
That's
great. Is a big piece or a big differentiator for the operator to understand that we are not a standalone device, which everybody else is.
Yeah, well, and I think that's that. My next real line of questioning is, and I said this, I know I've said this a few times. I grew up around the corner from Taco Bell's headquarters in Southern California, and one of their test stores that in the early 90s used to be testing kiosks was one of their Taco Bells in Tustin, right off the 5 freeway.
Yeah.
And I think about it, and I think about that experience, and quite frankly, the gap from where that experience is in, you know, 1993, 1994, where I saw them putting in those kiosks, to where it is today, it's amazing to me over the last 27 years that we haven't had more adoption, because right, the experience even 25 years ago was more consistent and better than going up to the cashier to get your food. And maybe I'm just an early adopter type person and a techno geek, but yeah. but I look at it and I go, how was Taco Bell? There was a Taco Bell and there was an Arby's, both of which were always testing some form of new consumer based technology 27 years ago, yeah, back in the Irvine area. Talk to me a little bit about kind of why do you think that is it just that labor conversation that you had? And again, this was in California, so the labor wages were significantly higher than they were in Ohio, say, yeah, back in the 90s. But talk to me a little bit about why you don't think that more restaurants have considered a technology like Grubber or something else.
No, that's a great question, right? And I'll give that to restaurant people. Let's say restaurants, retail, hospitality in general, they are creative guys. You're either good chefs, very creative, and have no understanding of technology, and you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. So putting a kiosk or self-ordering, I don't think people realize that it's going to disrupt their business operations tremendously. You're changing the way business is done in your restaurant. And that gravity of the situation is not understood. Usually the conversation is always around tech, which is, hey, let me look at the kiosk. What is the hardware? And can it connect into your POS? I don't think that should be a conversation point. The conversation point is, you know what? When you put this kiosk in, your cashiers will have to find something else to do. One, and your kitchen is going to be bombarded with probably 100 times more orders. So if you're taking 30 or 40 orders an hour because you can control the speed at the cash register, you are now going to get 120 orders in the same time frame How is your kitchen going to handle it? How are you going to deliver food? How are you going to keep the, is it a table tent? Is it a text message? Is it going to be a token number? Nobody's thinking, or rather, nobody's consulting in that space when kiosks were installed, which is, hey, I'm going to disrupt the way your business is done in that brick and mortar.
Yeah.
And there's no process around it, and there's no coaching for the business owner. And yeah.
Well, and I was gonna say, I think that that's part of, you know, and it even hit with COVID with a lot of different people because you were opening up the, you know, when I tell a very, very true story, before I moved to Texas from Southern California, one of our favorite brands we used to love going to, it was a Mexican brand, and my family used to love going there. Yeah. We happened to go on a Taco Tuesday, mm-hmm. and our experience was terrible in the middle of COVID. It was an outdoor patio, so we were able to go in and order and leave and go, you know, go out onto the patio to eat. But the experience was terrible because of what you're talking about with capacity management. So I think that even if I recall back to the early 90s, back at the Taco Bell, there was often times where that experience wasn't the best because they hadn't considered all of the other things that are going into that, which is, if you're going to increase your front end, you know, there's a built-in capacity. And while I'm in agreement with you that, while I'm in full agreement with you that things like the McDonald's line and the queuing system is antiquated and really, you know, troublesome from a growth perspective, at the same time, there's a built-in capacity mechanism there where I walk in and I see 40 people in line. I either say I'm going to wait and I realize that it's going to take me a while, or I'm going to leave and not experience that brand. The minute it all gets digital, one of the other things you need to consider is can your kitchen keep up, and what are your new guest expectations that you need to set? Talk to me a little bit about that and how you guys not only have, you know, what does your guys' experience look like on that as you guys are going to market?
And that is a great question, Jeremy, there. So there are two, I'll answer this from a vision perspective where we see this should be, and I'll answer now. So today when we do a pitch or we get an inbound call from a restaurant chain and says, hey, I need kiosks, our first question is why? Give me a floor plan and give me how operationally we are going to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's a long sales cycle and we are okay with it because when we deploy, we want to make sure there's adoption, because the VP of IT or the CIO or the COO is not going to run that restaurant. The manager, ops manager of that store is.
Yep.
And guess what? They change every 2 weeks. That's another problem. So we involve all the stakeholders and the people on the ground and say, we are going to put this here. Let's run a test order and let's see how the flow is going to look like.
Yep.
And tailor it. And every brand is different.
Absolutely.
As a result of that, we have seen two things. Like, imagine if I give you a new tool and give you no training, and it comes from your CEO and says, that's it. From today, I'm going to disrupt your whole restaurant operations. Go use this today morning.
Yep.
Versus,
yeah, your adoption is not going to be very, very high. And ultimately, you're going to get bad guest satisfaction scores, and the project's going to die pretty quickly.
That is correct. So what we are doing is this consulting, which is missing. So kind of we do consulting piece first. Why? What KPIs you want to hit? Is it, are you solving for labor? Do you want average ticket size? Or do you just want it because of guest experience? That alone can be a factor to put kiosks in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we ask all this in our Excel sheet and say, okay, now let's go pilot, track this for 90 days, and we'll give you the numbers.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, like BurgerFi, which is public, so I can tell you those numbers. And most of our customers are seeing the same. In the first 3 months, BurgerFi has over 70% usage. People walking in using the kiosk.
I love it. Yeah. Well, and I think especially depending upon your clientele, as you talk about, I think as they continue to trend younger and they expect it,
yeah.
I'm of the demographic that I remember walking up to a ticket counter at the airport
yes.
and walking into the bank to get money. And, yes. you know, I mean, all of us that are 40 plus remember a time when you didn't have a kiosk at the airport or didn't have it on your phone. All of us that are 40 plus remember a time when you had to go into the bank to get money.
Yes,
I don't know the last time I set foot inside of a bank, and I've never, ever go to the front counter unless I'm having to check a bag because I'm taking my golf clubs to go play golf somewhere.
Right.
You know, that's the only time I ever go up to the counter at the airport. Every other time it's on my phone or at a kiosk for whatever reason. If my phone's not working, I have to go to a kiosk, but I never actually go talk to anybody.
Yes. And that is and the other good, and again, not trying to sell grubber. I also want to let SMB, because another perception was, oh, McDonald's has the money. They are a big brand. They can afford this new tech. I want everybody to know through this podcast, whoever is listening on the business side, even if you're one restaurant operator, you can afford this kiosk. It's less than $200 a month with hardware, software, right? So, and they need it the most. If I'm a single shop owner and I am making coffee while my customers are waiting in line, guess what? Put in, you can take those 10 orders. Now you just stay in the kitchen and fulfill orders.
Yeah. Well, and that was one of the questions I was going to ask is, you know, first, you guys have democratized, or, you know, I like to use the word democratized because yes, Taco Bell, McDonald's, they've got an R&D department that's bigger than my company and your company combined, probably. Correct. You know, their IT department is enormous.
Yeah.
So they have the funding to do that. Part of where I see a lot of these tech adoption is that it doesn't get to Main Street America. You know, I don't know, the estimate 700,000 restaurants across the country. Yes, 50% of them are chains, but the other 50% of them are mom and pops or small regional chains.
Yep.
Talk to me a little bit about kind of how you guys have figured out how to democratize that, because it's not an easy thing to do to get it down to the level that that you guys have.
No, so that's where the platform comes in, right? So when we built this platform, we said we are going to build this where our cost of operations is low. It is self-sufficient, where customers can log in or make their own menu, buy a kiosk. And that is when Samsung also came in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Initially, a year and a half ago, we had to buy 6 different components and make our own kiosk. So we had a metal fabricator to build the housing. We had a screen provider who is a 21-inch or a 32-inch, right? Mm-hmm. Elo, MicroTouch, GT, you can name it, like on the B2B, on the business side of it.
Yep.
We had an Epson printer. We had a different scanner from Honeywell. And we had a payment provider from Verifone or Ingenico. So there were 6 components to assemble a single kiosk. Guess what? The pricing was then $8,000 to $10,000.
Yep.
But it was still a compelling proposition even back then, because it would pay off in 3 months if you replace a cashier position with it. Samsung came in and said, you know what, $2,500 all in.
Yeah, which is insane. When I heard that on the back channels, I was like, holy smokes, that's insane. How, because the self-service and grocery is still at that $10,000 to $12,000 per lane, if not more, depending upon how big they are. So, yes. You know, some of them are upwards of $25,000. But, you know, you look at what you guys have been able to do with Samsung. It's pretty amazing.
Correct. And same thing, if you look at IT support on all those grocery kiosks, the Windows licenses you have to buy, and just the maintenance, you need an IT army to manage.
Yeah.
You have 100% cloud. There's no additional licenses apart from that $2,499, and you are good to go, right?
That's amazing. That's amazing.
When you bundle it or lease it, we call it hardware as a service, you can get everything for less than $200 a month.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And I think
a lot of people from the democratization. Now, talk to me a little bit about, because you alluded to it earlier, which, you know, so you've solved the problem of you know, the cost of everything. The question oftentimes is, how do I integrate that into my normal workflow of my business? You talked about it earlier, you alluded to it, and I think that I want people to understand that it is going to fundamentally change the way that your operations works.
Yes.
You've got to make sure that you understand that, you know, one of the things that we recognize, and I'd love you to riff on this for a little bit, Bevan, is, once you put a kiosk in front of somebody, they modify an order more often than they would if they were standing at a cashier, or at least that's what our experience has been.
That's
and
correct.
So you've got to make sure that you've got your kitchen needs to know how to do those things. They need to be sure that they're putting the right product in the right place so that the right people get it at the right time, hot food hot, cold food cold, all of those kind of things. And so talk to me a little bit about some of the operational changes that you guys have to consult people through in order to make it successful. Because tech for tech's sake, I say this all the time, is not a benefit to anyone. But tech to solve true business problems as you're talking about, is critical, and it pays for itself if done properly. But there's so much to learn and so much to give as it relates to even how you operate your kitchen. How do you get your food delivered? How do you prep your food? How do you lay it out so that it gets to the right places? Talk to me a little bit about it. I'm going to let you go for a while on this one because I think it's pretty interesting, because I think it does need to change a mindset than just, hey, we're going to throw technology in there, we're going to fire a bunch of cashiers, or we're going to turn them into cooks. Correct. Or whatnot.
Correct. Technology just enables to solve your problem, right? It's buying a car. If you buy a car, if you don't start it and if you don't know how to drive it, it's just not going to drive for you.
Yep, absolutely.
But we have seen on the kiosk side, it's like, oh, COVID hit, I'm going to buy QR code ordering and everything is going to just start working automatically. And then you get this frantic phone calls on the call center and the support line. Oh, but it's not doing this, and it's not doing this. I don't know how to send the order. And
I'm like, sorry, I'm laughing because your story is exactly the same way that that I'm thinking about. Yeah,
so sorry. Like, you know, when you have it's like buying a Tesla, and Tesla promotes this, and I'm like, stop promoting auto drive. It does not drive itself.
Mm-hmm.
It enables you to drive better and have less accidents. Yes, it is automated to that extent. So yes. Kiosk will enable you to take more orders without having a human interface, but it's not going to solve. It's not a magic bullet. You have to still drive it and learn how to drive it. So coming back in the kitchen, we do multiple things. So a lot of these kitchens, they have somebody taking the order, and then the same guy goes and fills out the drinks and the fries.
Yep.
And we're like, that needs to stop, because now we don't have to do that. And we also give some. We also have a product called KDS, Kitchen Display Systems. Mm-hmm. They have 21-inch or 15-inch screens. And instead of you just using kitchen chits or KOT, kitchen tickets, have the tickets, but also use the screen now.
Yep.
Because when you have 50 orders, I can line them up in that screen. Oh, and by the way, why don't we divide the screen? So this is what we did at one of the customers. We gave them three screens to alleviate that traffic and said, screen one will get dine-in, screen two will get takeout, and screen three will take all the third-party and drive-through and orders. So imagine the noise died down, because we call it the throttling, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Because right now what is happening is that printer, that kitchen printer, is printing an Uber order or is printing an online order, which is going to be picked up at noon. It's 11 right now. I'm waiting at the kiosk. But you know what the kitchen is going to do? Prepare that Uber order first.
Yes, because it came out of the ticket first.
Yes.
They're not even going to look at the ticket and say, oh, this is not for another hour, right?
Right. And I am standing right in front of that kitchen, and I'm like, but you just made that, but there's nobody there, but I'm waiting. I'm the first order in your dining area. It's like, oh, we don't. Again, so those are the training or the changes we suggest, which is maybe use a KDS, maybe divide it by order types. That's one. Mm-hmm. Maybe the total number of orders. So we ask the customers, hey, customer, how many can you order? How many orders of burgers you can handle every hour?
Yep.
If you get more than that, guess what? I'm going to hold it back. I'm going to queue it up for you, and I'll not bombard the kitchen. Number two. Now, third one, loyalty customers. I know Jeremy comes in at this coffee shop every day at 9:30, but today I have 50 orders from my mobile app. But Arcadius will tell you that you are a loyal customer. So guess what? I'm going to push it to the first of the screen.
That's awesome. Love that idea.
Right. So these are the conversations we want to have with the restaurants are these, not, oh, can I buy? This is where, this is how not early this is in the stage where we are like, can I buy a kiosk? And we are saying, let's go past beyond that. We have already democratized it. You don't have to worry about the cost and the connectivity. Let's not talk tech. Let's talk. When you get those 100 orders in the kitchen, how are you going to manage it?
Yeah, what's the business solution? How are you going to produce the food that you need for those customers?
Correct. And then to your second point, can we divide the fry station and the burger station? Can we divide? And if we divide the fry station, how do we then? Can we give you an expediter screen to connect all the orders back so you can give it back to the customer?
Yep. Now, how do you turn that cashier back into somebody that is doing that work rather than doing the cashiering and the drive-through and the cash handling, all of that?
Right.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think about, you know, people often say in the world that I'm in, oh, you guys are just trying to put in tech to eliminate jobs. And the truth is we're trying to get them to do more important jobs, like talk to the customer and make sure that they're happy with the order that they got, not just be a rote, you know, something that a kiosk can do for them.
No, but that's a good point, right? If you see, automation has always created more jobs. Automation will never take jobs away. And I can tell you this, at least on this restaurant side of the business, nobody wants to be a cashier. Show me one person in US who will say, yes, I want a cashier position.
Yes. Not very many.
No. But they all want to do better jobs and do better things with their life, right? COVID has, you know, there's a great resignation. People don't want jobs because a lot of us have done some introspection and seen, what am I doing with my life? I want to do something more useful.
Yep. So, I want to contribute more to the world, and sitting right there taking burger orders all day long is not necessarily what I want to be known for when I'm gone, right?
Right. So yes. Have you prepared food? Yes. You can say, look, I can now make burgers and flip patties at 50 per hour, and my customers are happy. And I'm interacting more with my customers. How is the food? How is family? How is sports? Weather? Small talk? Nobody does that anymore. And we miss it, right? When you go to the restaurant, it's just busy, busy, go fast, 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 fast. That whole experience is gone, no matter where you go.
Yep.
And that is what technology will bring back or help bring back. But yeah, so that's one piece on the kitchen side. But it's also then, how will customer get their food? Because one thing kiosk does, or digital ordering in general has done, you'll always see Uber Eats driver and DoorDash drivers lingering around in the restaurant. You'll see, if you go to Starbucks, we order on the app, and frankly, it defeats the purpose, because every time I order from the app and I go, I always have to wait another 20 minutes anyway.
Yes, exactly.
Because there's no segregation and there's no pickup mechanism, because Starbucks said, okay, COVID app, but what after that? That's when the real journey starts. So the customer journey has even got worse with the app and with kiosk. So then we also consult and say, okay, so now the kitchen has prepped the food. How will the customer know? Is there a waiting area? Is there sitting? Is there outdoor patio sitting where I can just wait and play games? I don't know. Or can I text the customer if you're in the mall or if you're in a shopping plaza? Can I say, thank you for your order. Please shop around. We'll text you when your food is ready.
I love that.
Is there a food locker? Can I leave it in the locker and then you can pick it up anytime you want? Same if you're using order ahead, instead of you, Domino's does a good job, right? Domino's, you know exactly when the food is coming to you.
Yep.
If you do that for every restaurant, imagine the pain which is the customer is now having to wait. So the whole idea of order ahead was not to wait. Guess what? After all these third-party delivery apps, you still have to wait.
Well, and I think part of the issue with Starbucks is they do have capacity problems and they don't do a good job of throttling. And so you have no idea. You send through and it's completely blind. That idea of Domino's is perfect from a perspective of they're giving you updates as you're going along.
Yeah.
And so even if, you know what, if you knew you were on your way to Starbucks and you needed to run to the CVS right next door to the Starbucks and you knew your drink wasn't going to be ready for 10 more minutes and you needed to go to CVS, you probably would go to CVS and then go to Starbucks. But instead, sometimes when you get there and it's ready. And sometimes when you get there, it's not ready. See? You have no idea and you have no line of sight into the capacity of that kitchen. And all right, I'm going to change gears here a little bit because I want to talk a little bit about where you think the future of this is going. Maybe 5-6 years ago, I don't exactly remember, the guys up at Shake Shack did something where it was a completely digital restaurant in New York City. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that story, but they went completely digital. No cashier. You know, they still had cooks in the kitchen, but the guest ordering experience was exactly what you guys are doing.
Yes.
They tried. My understanding is it didn't work as well as they would have wanted it to, and they went back to cashiers. When do you think that adoption curve is going to be, you know, there's been a lot of accelerants. COVID's been an accelerant. This labor shortage and the great resignation has been an accelerant. But when do you think it's going to be at a point where the majority of our ordering is going to be done digitally versus not? And what do you think it's going to take us to get there?
I think it's majority is done digitally after COVID, right? You order online, but brick and mortar digital is not there yet. Two reasons. I think the DNA of every operator has to change. If you don't change, the CEO or the founder or the president has to buy in. It cannot be I think most of these projects today still live in IT. Oh, it's online ordering because it's tech, IT, you go take care of it.
Yeah.
I think it has to go upstream, and the COO and the CEO has to buy into this. and say, my DNA of my restaurant is going to change the way I operate and do business. That's one. And the second thing is, on the vision side, in 5 years is a long time, but even in 3 to 4 years, 3 years maybe, it should be where, ideal scenario, where Amazon or all the retail shops are. They had, imagine Amazon and all these retail chains were forced to do the same because they were getting 100,000 orders an hour.
So yeah.
Ideally, it should be when I open my restaurant as a restaurant operator at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. every day, I should know what my capacity is going to be based on historical data. I should know how many customers are going to walk in today. I should know how much I have to order, how many employees I have to call in. And based on that, your throttling will be taken care of. And we have that data. I know for historically, for a Thanksgiving weekend for last 4 years, hey, you taco restaurant, you get 160 customers on lunch hour. So guess what? You need 4 employees to come in, and I will auto schedule them for you based on their performance. And they come in. At that point, kiosk is just an enabler, as I was saying earlier. It does not solve your operational problem, but I think it will be completely automated at some point where I will know, it's basically forecasting. I'll know my employee forecast, I'll know my customers walking in forecast, and I'll know my order forecast. And based on that forecast, I will know how to operate it. It's all data-driven versus my gut and people texting in the morning, hey, can you show up to work today? I did not expect this many people to show up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think to take that even a little further, my prediction is that they'll know what you want from Starbucks, and they'll say, do you want, you know, the tall cappuccino with an extra shot of espresso in your cart on your way there, and they'll have that prepped. You know, I mean, I think eventually it'll get to that point, maybe 3 years from now, 4 years from now, 5 years from now, because the same thing is happening every day with Amazon. I've got, you know, their smart cameras around my home. And when the batteries are dying, they suggest that the batteries need to be here in three days or they're going to die. Right. That same tech exists within restaurants and we're not utilizing it, nor is it democratized to a point that people can utilize it to make better business decisions.
Yes, correct. So I will touch upon that on the Grubber side. We have something called as your last 5 orders or being a patron. So if you come walk in and give your phone number in, it will show your last 5 orders. You don't have to pay again. You just select it. We have your credit card information and it will say, thank you, Jeremy, for your order. And that's it. So it's there, but there's a lot of other, we also have a facial rec where while you're driving, you have a Grubber app or a Starbucks app in that case, but it's Grubber technology, for example. You're in that 2 mile radius and it's lunchtime. I'll tell you, will you have your regular pizza today for lunch? Mm-hmm. I'll prep it for you, right? It's coming, but there's a lot of PII rules on facial rec and all these using that personal identifiable information is what is stopping innovation in the space.
But it's funny in retail. Yes, I fully agree with you. And I know that you've got to walk that tightrope. Yeah. But I think to myself, I don't get advertisements for makeup in my Amazon feed. My wife might, but I don't. Yeah. And you know what? I don't, you know, my kids, my youngest is 6. I don't get diaper ads in my Amazon feed or my Target feed or my Walmart feed or my, you know, any of it. Yeah. But it's amazing to me. I don't drink, but I still get advertisements from every one of the brands that has alcohol that I subscribe to their newsletter. They've never, ever had me order a drink in their brand, but they still see, and you know, because it's spray and pray, it's just, let's throw stuff out there. I think eventually it'll get to the point, because I do have a fundamental belief, and I say this often, when I ask you if you want to go to Cheesecake Factory for lunch, you're going to go, okay, normally at Cheesecake Factory, I get the club sandwich, or I get the, you know, Chinese chicken salad. Do I want one of those two things? And if I don't want one of those two things, then I choose not to go there. I think eventually we're going to get to a point where, you know, we're creatures of habit, you know, as human beings, we go to the same places, we try the same things, we eat the same things where we've had the good experience, and the brands that can capitalize on that guest experience to deliver what I want, when I want it, how I want it through technology are going to ultimately win the race for that wallet share, in my opinion.
Cannot agree more, right? And that's why I call it behind the phase one of this life cycle. First, it's adoption. Hey, restaurant, believe that digital is here to stay. Get out of this tech hamster wheel.
Yep.
Get to phase two where you have rolled it out to every restaurant and now customers are used to force the behavior.
Yeah.
Once you have the adoption and for and customers are now used to it, phase three is make it smart.
Yeah. Yep. Make it better for them.
The first
kiosk experience at the airport was pretty bad. And right. Nowadays, you know, it's so much more efficient than any counter service deal that you could do.
Right. Because your Apple Face ID will be open at some time. Why can't I order through my phone and say, "Hey Siri, I'll take," or Siri's like, "Hey, it's lunchtime," and then it orders and goes to the restaurant on its own. Or you walk up to the kiosk and the kiosk says, "Welcome back, Jeremy," without you doing anything.
Yeah, love that.
And it is also doing suggestive sell because it's summer. I know what you ordered for your drinks last summer. Imagine that, right? And the summer special is back. And you don't have to think all this. To your point about where Amazon and some of these retailers are, I think that that is where the restaurant needs to be. But the journey has to start with the DNA and the DNA change in the company itself. Because right now, we're very food-focused and selling franchisees, and that's it.
Well, and the other thing that I know has probably been a deterrent for you guys, because I hear it from a lot of different tech providers, is that the core technology at the center of the store, the point of sale, has not always been the same open architecture that you have. While it's significantly growing, some of the legacy point of sale that's in more than 50% of the brands out there, they struggle with it. You know, now you talk about Clover, you talk about Square, you talk about, you know, some of these other upstarts, they are giving you the ability to have these kind of integrations because they're you know, they don't have the scarcity mindset. They have the mindset that says, you know what, more transactions coming through their platform, the better. The more, you know. But some of those legacy guys, I know you guys probably ran into that as well.
Yep, a lot, right? And it's nothing. They are trying, but you know, when you're a company of that size and that old, it's tough with all the technical debt you're carrying, and the architecture is just outdated now, and it's tough to just make such a huge change, right? And for the restaurants, it is. It's working. Why touch it? I'm paying $30 for it. I don't want to touch it.
Yep. No. Because my job in the last 10 years has been to sell away from some of that stuff and sell a newer point of sale that's open architecture and allows you to do stuff like you guys are doing at Kroger. It's been a fun journey because especially the bigger the brand is, with the bigger piece of tech they have in there, the harder it is to get that sales cycle to happen. Not to mention the operational changes that need to go into place. So,
and that is a real reason, because they have to retrain all the employees and do operational change. They don't want to change the tech.
Yep. Yeah. Well, change management is one of the hardest things. People will ask, "Who's our biggest competitor?" And I would suggest that your biggest competitor is staying the same. Yeah. You know what? You're selling change management as much as you're selling Grubber. You know, you got to figure out how to get the pain of staying the same to be greater than the pain of changing to something new. And like I've said, the accelerants of COVID and the accelerants of the labor shortages, I'm sure are giving you guys some opportunities to help people out quite a bit.
Yeah. Next time you should ask the question about, and I do this in the room for fun, which is, have you changed your car in the last 10 years?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Or your laptop. And I say it all the time. It's like, really? You're not. But they're so averse to changing it.
No, because your car is leaking. Like, literally, I some of the large customers we work with, they have an army of IT people supporting menu changes.
Yep.
Supporting just that the Windows 7 machine still works. So it's exactly like having a 1985 Chevy and you doing oil change and going to like 8 different mechanics for doing 8 different things, but will not change the car.
Yep, exactly.
You can't get to work. You can't get home. You can't drive anywhere. It's just keeping you alive and stopping all your growth, but you'll not change it. And that, there's no answer to that.
And you're competing with somebody like McDonald's, who's buying technology companies to compete in this space. And it's just so foolish when you think about it.
Yeah. So, we are trying. And to your point, I think you hit it right, is the change management, right?
Yep.
They're not scared about kiosks or digital. They're scared with change and retraining their employees because they themselves don't understand it.
Yep. Yeah. Or they've been burned by too many technology companies in the past who have promised them the world and didn't tell them. I mean, I love the fact that you guys have that concept of it's going to be hard and it's going to take work. It's not this, you know, this panacea of you buy this and all your problems go away. No, you're going to have to change the way you do your operation. And I love that you guys have considered that because I think way too often tech companies are like, we're going to sell you this. And, you know, to your example earlier, you know, we just threw in QR ordering at the beginning of COVID and the world is going to be better. And the truth is it's not. It's not because you've got a lot of work to do. Yeah. So,
guess what? 20% of those QR is gone now. At least it's gone.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, we've got a customer that deployed QR and they said it publicly, so I don't feel bad saying it. BJ's Restaurants and Brewhouse out of Huntington Beach, California, they went back to paper menus because they actually found that the spend was less on the phone, ironically. And so it'd be something interesting to look at the data on that. They at least found that showing pictures of the menu and showing pictures of the item, they actually were getting more spend than they were out of the QR in a table service environment. I think the opposite plays in a counter service environment because you've got the kiosk that can upsell and do all of those kind of things. But I just thought it was an interesting approach because they had not, and I know their CTO, they had not done any upselling on the app. It was really just allow them to order and don't suggest a order, the dessert, or don't, you know, anybody that's ever been to BJ's has probably had a Pizookie or seen a Pizookie come out. You know, you've got kids. I'm sure, you know, you're in Florida. I'm sure you've had a Pizookie or two in your day with your kids.
We have. So that's exactly right. Right. And we did that survey with another customer too. They deployed our QR code, kiosk, and POS, and we had a table. The average ticket size was highest on the kiosk. Second was POS, and QR code was third. And it was less than 5% adoption. We are also seeing in stadiums where they implemented QR code across all the seats and everywhere else, but it's less than 8% of total F&B sales at every game.
Wow. Well, I was just at a game this weekend. I was just at an FC Dallas game this weekend, and I had the QR code, and I chose not to because I was like, you know what? I know that my drink is not going to come very fast. I need to get up and just go walk. Right. So I live in the tech space and I trust the tech to work. I didn't trust that they were going to operationalize it. They're going to operationalize it well enough that I was going to meet my guest expectation.
That is my point, that they bought the tech and they have not trained their staff, which is temporary staff, which comes from churches and other spaces, on how to deliver a QR code order.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Manual for that. Right. So, so we understand. And that is where I think Grubber is committed on the education side, that we will educate and consult if we have to.
Yeah.
We're okay with the long sales cycle because we truly believe that we can fundamentally change how commerce is done at all these restaurants and businesses, right? Retail.
Love that. Love that.
So technology is just another vehicle for us to pass that message. Technology is not our end goal. Technology is just a start. And technology will then enable this experience.
We've gone all over the place. And I love the conversation. I feel like I could sit and talk forever about where technology is today and technology is going. Yeah. For those that want to know more about what you guys are doing at Grubber, give me some insight. How do they get in touch with you? How do they get in touch with your team to learn more about it? I love what your guys' passion is. I think that there's a lot of market opportunity for you guys to solve lots of people's problems. So tell our audience how more to get a hold of your team and learn more about whether Grubber can help their business to get into this next phase of digital ordering.
So best place would be www.grubber.com, GRUBBR.com. It has our email, phone number. There's a page to submit your request. You can hit me up on LinkedIn. Bavin Asher. There are not too many Bavin Ashers, so you'll find me.
Okay.
Or search our GRUBBR, search the LinkedIn page, and you can hit all the employees there.
I love it. Are we at liberty to post the proposal video in that same place? Because you can always go search YouTube for that proposal that you talked about earlier in the call.
No, please. I've tried burying it. I bought that up after like 7 years. I don't think anybody knows.
I love it. Well, thank you for the insight. I know we went pretty wide ranging as we talked, not just about Grubber, but really the state of technology. To our audience, guys, we know that you guys have got a lot of choices out there of different places that you guys can spend your time and energy. So we appreciate you guys spending time with us each time we post one of these episodes. Go check out Grubber while you guys are online, while you're out there. If you haven't already subscribed to the newsletter, please do so. Once a month, you'll get an email with all of the blog posts and the podcasts that we've posted for the month. Again, also connect with the guys at Grubber, connect with Bavin and his team. They'd love to talk to you guys more about what they can do. Bavin, thank you very much for your time, and to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.